6 seconds or the length of 2 football fields for a large truck traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. Never cut in front of an 18-wheeler for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Members.
Well, as the United States gets close to the 4th of July holiday, a number of different shortages are threatening the holiday, I guess, if you want to think about it in the most standard way. But this is a good opportunity to talk about a number of the different areas in which there are shortages. I think it's important for context. Why are we talking about this? We're talking about this because, number one, I have no interest in hiding shortages just because Joe Biden is president. That's a common one that I'm accused of. And secondly, none of these things have anything to do with Joe Biden, particularly when you consider the global nature of many of these shortages. A few things to be aware of. There is a sriracha shortage. This is, I guess I'm not wrong in calling it an Asian chili sauce. I think that's the way it's most typically described. And there is a lot of breathless coverage of the looming sriracha shortage. I love sriracha, but for me, first of all, by the way, if you really, it's just the primary sriracha that there's a shortage of, so there are all sorts of other sriracha brands as well. You can also look at other hot sauces, but indeed there is the expectation that the country's most popular brand of sriracha will be in a shortage coming soon. Yufong Foods, the California-based producer of this sauce, says they will have to scale back production due to an abysmal spring crop of Mexican red jalapenos. Nothing to do with Joe Biden. It is not Joe Biden's fault that in Mexico they've had a bad crop of red jalapenos. Okay. With 4th of July coming up, mustard, a global mustard shortage is looming ahead of summer barbecues, as reported by Axios. Yeah. A few of the largest mustard brands, like Kraft Heinz, say they don't expect shortages, but there are some mustards which will be experiencing stock issues.
I love
a good mustard. I'm partial to grain mustard and brown deli mustard. I'm just not big on the yellow stuff. It sort of seems a little bit cartoonish to me.
And I know baseball fans react kindly to that.
No, but in all seriousness, I love mustard.
There will be mustard available.
Maybe just not the one that you like.
More seriously,
there is a medical contrast dye shortage.
And
medical contrast dyes are used for a number of different imaging procedures and surgical procedures. I talked recently of my girlfriend's perforation that she had, and one of the ways that they confirm the perforation has been fixed is they use one of these contrast dyes under imaging and then see if any of the dye escapes where it's supposed to be. These are very, very important medical materials. It's used in diagnosing and treating stroke, aneurysm, cardiac conditions. These are essential to hospitals in many ways.
There is a
delay happening there.
The global chip shortage will continue.
This predates Joe Biden
and has nothing to do with Joe Biden.
And industry experts don't believe there will be relief on the chip shortage until 2023.
There is a nurse shortage.
Anecdotally, Shreveport, Louisiana, warning of a nurse shortage,
but this is happening nationally in many, many different places.
When we've recently been in the hospital for birth and for everything else that's been going on,
many traveling nurses
are just like, they'll literally come up from like Baltimore to New York City for a week.
And just work a week
in a hospital unfamiliar to them, then go back down to Baltimore. A lot of that going on to try to deal with the shortage in some areas.
That is expected to continue.
And then lastly, for what I'll talk about today,
a pilot shortage could lead to flight delays and cancellations,
and we have already seen that.
So this is a major, large issue,
which we will continue to follow.
Hopefully everybody's 4th of July will be okay.
Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger is lashing out at Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert.
Remember that Lauren Boebert recently said,
"I'm sick and tired of this separation of church and state."
It's kind of the Constitution, Lauren,
but you're tired of it.
Adam Kinzinger calling it the Christian Taliban.
As a reminder, here is the clip from a couple of days ago.
Lauren Boebert going full theocracy, saying,
"Church and state,
I'm sick of it."
The reason we had so many overreaching regulations in our nation is because the church complied.
Right.
The church is supposed to direct the government.
The government is not supposed to direct the church.
That is not how our founding fathers intended it.
And I'm tired of this separation of church and state junk.
It's not in the Constitution.
It was in a stinking letter, and it means nothing like what they say it does.
Well, it turns out that is crazy.
And fellow Republican launching a civil war salvo from within the Republican Party.
Adam Kinzinger says, quote,
there is no difference between this, meaning this video of Lauren Boebert that we just watched.
There's no difference between this and the Taliban.
We must oppose the Christian Taliban.
I say this as a Christian.
Has a Republican politician straight up said Christian Taliban before?
Because they love to talk about Sharia law.
And it's bad, and it's coming. Hold on a second.
The Christian version of Sharia law is what has actually been plaguing this country for a very long time.
I disagree with Adam Kinzinger politically,
but I have some respect for him.
Now, I know it's easier to put country over party the way that he's doing
when you're leaving.
I understand that.
I'm not naive yet.
I get it.
He's in a position where he doesn't care
because he's leaving.
But it is amazing how the bar has been lowered.
Democrats today would be thrilled to some degree to deal with the Republicans from 15 years ago.
Not that those were good people. We shouldn't see them as good people.
But 15 years ago,
the Republicans were much more reasonable to deal with.
That being said,
the Republicans of 15 years ago are responsible
for the Republican Party today being what it is.
And what I mean by that is
they didn't condemn the start
of
the rhetoric that led to Trumpism today. They didn't condemn the extremism. They didn't say, well, we've got to stop this here or here or here. They allowed it to keep going.
So
while I would much rather be dealing with the Republicans 15 years ago than people like Lauren Boebert,
that's for sure.
We also have to understand the historical context, which I talked about with many people, including Noam Chomsky on the show before,
that
they are also responsible for what we are seeing today.
But to the extent that Adam Kinzinger is willing to call it out,
to the extent that Adam Kinzinger is maybe going to change some Republicans' mind and get some Republicans to go, hey, you know what, the Boebert version of Republicanism is crazy.
It's not even
constitutional.
Tired
of separation of church and state.
It's like being tired
of the First Amendment, Lauren,
which I thought you cared about.
To the extent that he might have an impact on anybody,
I gladly welcome
Adam Kinzinger's comments.
If you want
an example
of how low
the anti-choice right is willing to go,
the Mississippi
Republican Speaker of the House
says
that even if a 12-year-old is raped by her dad and is pregnant as a result,
she
must be forced to carry the baby to term.
It's
unconscionable.
It's unconscionable.
We have an article.
It's pretty vile.
12-year-old incest victims should birth dad's child.
House Speaker Gunn
says this article's by our friend Ashton Pittman,
who's been a guest on the show.
Mississippi House Speaker Philip Gunn says abortion should be illegal,
even
for a 12-year-old rape victim
carrying
her father or uncle's child.
He made the remarks
to reporters in the House
after
the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade and Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization.
I have video.
I know that this is really, 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 really tough to watch.
Take a listen.
I believe life begins at conception.
Every life
is valuable.
And those are
my personal beliefs. That is my personal belief.
I believe
life begins at conception.
Now. Life begins at conception is sort of a cop-out.
I don't know
anyone who would deny
that
there is a form of life
at conception.
The relevant question is, when are we talking about a person?
And
in just about no other way are people like this guy
willing
to provide the other person who benefits
to,
you know, a two-day-old clump of cells that he would call life.
They don't want to provide
child support.
They don't think
it's the basis for citizenship. We've gone through it before.
But that position,
a 12-year-old
should be forced
to carry
the incestuous pregnancy
to term.
And it's sick
to even say it.
It's not pro-child,
and it's not pro-woman.
And then I realized,
wait a second,
there is no woman.
It's another child,
another 12-year-old child.
But we're supposed to believe
that this is pro-life,
and that he has the interests
of
the child in mind. Our friend Ashton Pittman
has been
reporting on this,
and he writes,
quote,
in Mississippi,
poor mothers only have access to postpartum Medicaid coverage
for
2 months after giving birth.
This year,
the Republican-led Mississippi Senate voted overwhelmingly to vote
to extend
that to 2 months.
Speaker Gunn
killed the bill.
Also
adding later in a Twitter thread,
quote,
Mississippi boasts the nation's highest infant mortality rate.
Highest
fetal mortality rate,
lowest
overall life expectancy rate,
and highest
COVID-19 death rate.
Mississippi's
maternal mortality rate
is 1.9
times higher
than the nation
as a whole.
Mississippi
is a mess.
It's not an insult
to the people.
Just the facts, folks.
Healthcare
in Mississippi
is a disaster.
Education
in Mississippi
is a disaster.
The economy of Mississippi
is a disaster.
And I feel bad.
I feel bad about it
for the people who live there.
And what they want to do is force 12-year-olds
impregnated
by their fathers
to carry the pregnancy to term.
What they want should be criminal.
Truly horrible people.
Let me know your thoughts.
Is this even a shock to you?
Find me on Twitter
at dpacman. The David Pakman Show is an audience-supported program. We have a membership program. It is completely cool and completely legal.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money. Everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Yeah. And you can sign up at joinpakman.com. You can use the coupon code BIGVOTING22 to get a discount. Let's start calls via Discord. We take phone calls at davidpakman.com/discord. They're not really phones, but we still call them phone calls. Let's start today with our friendly neighbors to the north going to Yoel from Ontario. Is this Ontario, Canada, Yoel?
Oh, boy.
Yoel, if you unmute, I'll be able to hear you. Yoel from Ontario, last chance. An inauspicious start today. That is disappointing.
Let's go to Mark from Los Angeles.
Mark, I'm confident you'll save us.
Hello, David.
You're on the air.
Yes.
Awesome, fantastic. Love your show. First of all, I just wanted, people have already said this, but have you seen more signs that the abortion issue might shift the needle in terms of midterms?
Yes, I have.
Because the funny thing is, I work with a lot of folks, a lot of conservatives. And one of the things that they don't seem to realize is I actually know a woman who is a born-again Christian, who is fervently pro-abortion. She actually had one. And she's unapologetic. It's kind of shocking. So you don't realize how many people are actually in favor of their rights to be able to do what they want to do with their bodies. That's one thing I just wanted to say is, I think this might be a big touchstone, a shockwave that might overtake the next election. Because it's one thing when it's ambiguous, but when they take something away from you, you realize, wake up.
So two things on that. Number one, more of the country is in favor of abortion being legal in most cases than at any time during the Roe v. Wade era. So that's exactly why, as Mark points out, there's even born-again Christians or whatever who are in favor of individuals having that right. And secondly, every generic ballot poll that I have seen this week shows Democrats now leading where three months ago Democrats were losing. So I do think, Mark, that Democrats have a shot thanks to what's going on with Roe v. Wade and thanks to what's going on with the lack of gun safety regulation.
That's fantastic. Oh, and also I wanted to say congratulations. The funny thing is I dip out, I actually take your advice. I dip out of politics sometimes because it becomes so toxic that I just can't take it anymore. And I stop listening to you. I'm a subscriber, by the way.
Thank you.
But I just stopped listening. I take a break for like a week or something. And I came back and all of a sudden, you were gone.
Listen, I was shocked. I all of a sudden came back and I had a baby. If you think you were shocked to hear it, I was shocked to be doing it, you know, Mark?
Wait, is this one of those, like, she didn't know he was pregnant?
No. It is nothing like that. It's just still that shocking.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember watching a gynecologist say that one of the most amazing things about her job that she never gets over is the fact that she walks in the room and then by the time they're finished, there's an extra person in the world.
Well, try going to the hospital with two people and coming out with three. It's quite a shocker.
Well, I want to congratulate you, Dave. Oh, and one last thing I want to say is, you know, I work as a stagehand.
Okay. And one of the things that I never could get is, remember the whole voting rights bills that failed? Yes.
I worked on the Super Bowl, and the person who sung the Star Spangled Banner is black. I'm African American. It's black. The person who sung the national anthem is black. The overwhelming majority of the football members are black. And I'm just like standing here, like working. I'm just like, why can't we? We need to like just like do a protest. Do like what's that famous Greek play where all the women have sex with the men until you know they stop the war? We need to just like protest or something, or get active in order to try to force these people, because that is a $5 billion event. If black folks said, you know what? I was shocked too. It was a $5 billion at SoFi Stadium. That thing, in terms of like all the money that's made off of Super Bowl, it's $5 billion.
I got you, Mark. It's quite a number. Listen, Mark, you said it all. I'm going to let you go. I look forward to hearing from you again, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, Mark shot out of a cannon today, on fire, completely on fire. Okay, let's go next to John from Kentucky. Welcome, John.
Hi there.
Oh, boy. Dear God.
John, you're coming through all modulated like you're a robot. You're not a robot, are you?
I am not. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better. You sounded like C-3PO or 3CPO or whatever it is.
That's a Star Wars guy. I can say you were right the first time.
Okay.
Or previous Star Wars. That's not what I'm calling it.
Okay.
I was keeping track of the Supreme Court stuff over the last couple of weeks, just like everybody else has. And of course, the Dobbs decision was heartbreaking to see what happened to, you know, actively creating half of our population as second class citizens. That's, you know, something that we all have to contend with over the next. But what the decision that really caught my attention over the last couple of days was the Kennedy decision. And while I used to be a Christian, and I can understand why Christians initially believe that, you know, it's an innocuous football coach, he believes his creator is going to protect him, so he should pray over people. I can understand the Christian perspective.
Yep.
But what is important to me was not necessarily the decision itself, but the fact that the case in his decision. By saying that the coach was quietly praying to himself in midfield at any time that any other person wasn't acting as a representative. But then Justice Sotomayor posted a picture of him praying with the entire team, very clearly acting as a representative of a football coach at that time.
Yeah.
I was wondering, like, I have a conservative aunt who argues as this facts versus alternative facts stuff. It's just a little bit scary seeing that type of argumentation coming from the Supreme Court now.
Without a doubt. You're absolutely right. It was not a quiet prayer. It was a huge thing. The coach with multiple circles of players around him and the media around them. It's implicitly coercive because of the power dynamics. And John, you're completely right in your assessment.
Absolutely.
And just like Martin, I just want to say congratulations on the baby, man. And you have a wonderful rest of the day.
All right, there we go. There's John from Kentucky. Let's go next to John from Sacramento. John, welcome. John from Sacramento, you're on the air. And last chance for John from Sacramento. You're not muted, so I'm guessing you have the wrong microphone selected in Discord. One last shot at fixing that. All right, John from Sacramento, not working. Let's go to Chris from Philly. Chris, I know you're going to save us with a properly configured microphone, right, my friend?
Hopefully.
All right, that's not bad.
So I've been waiting to do this for a long time. Chris from Philly.
Chris, are you saying you're identifying yourself as a black man? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you.
One thing, I have a pet peeve with Republicans right now.
Yeah.
It's with the whole Roe v. Wade thing. And no one's really sitting there saying nothing about Sharia law anymore.
Oh, right. In other words, let me see if I understand your point. You're saying they used to talk about, oh, they want to take over American law with Sharia law. But now that they're trying to succeed to some degree at taking over American civil law with Christianity, now they don't care about that anymore.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, Adam Kinzinger, I talked about this on the show. Adam Kinzinger is calling, I don't know if you saw, Lauren Boebert recently said she's tired of separation of church and state. And Adam Kinzinger, who's a Republican, called it Christian Taliban, which is exactly what it is.
At the end of the day, I guess you can say saved again after Amnesty got exposed.
Right. It's great. These people are hypocrites and they're dangerous. But the really scary thing, Chris, is if they do well in November, all bets are off as to how far they can go with this. They could really do some serious damage to the country.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
All right, my friend. Anything else?
No, that was it.
All right, Chris from Philly, thanks for the call.
No problem.
All right, Chris from Philly, concise. What a beautiful phone call.
Love it.
Let's go to Mike from southeastern Pennsylvania. Mike, welcome. Mike from southeastern Pennsylvania, you're on the air. And last chance for Mike from southeastern Pennsylvania.
By the way,
I know people start to think the tech problems are on my end.
They're not.
I can see what's going on. Like, this is a user who has... This is a user who's gone, actually. Okay. That's why I can't hear them. They just hung up.
Let's go next to
Dave from Windsor. Dave from Windsor, welcome.
Hi, Mr. Pacman.
Welcome.
I didn't really have a question. But sometimes I listen to other stuff when I'm doing work.
Congrats
on the kid.
All right, Dave from Windsor, thank you. I will put you back in the queue so you can listen. Well, boy, what a phone. Must be a full moon, right? Not that I believe in that type of thing.
Let's go to Trenton from Detroit.
Trenton, welcome. Give us a question, sir.
Okay, David. So my question is, considering everything that's going on in the January 6th committee, obviously, I mean, damning testimony and up until yesterday, the testimony is probably some of the most damning since Watergate. Do you think realistically it's going to actually change anybody's mind about the 2022 primaries or the 2024 presidential election? Because unfortunately, I don't think it will.
I think it'll change some nominal number of minds. I don't think it'll be a game changer. However, if it leads to charges, which I don't think it will, but if it led to serious criminal charges against people, I think it might. But just if it's just they do the committee and then the vote is over and then we have the November election and then that's it, I think it will not do anything significant. No, I think you're right.
From my end, I have a lot of people that are kind of in that Trump MAGA land who I sort of work with, and a lot of the other stuff they talk about it and deny it. With this, it seems like they're not even tuned in. So I'm not sure if it's a good sign for the sanity or not.
It's not a particularly good sign. I mean, this is always a thing. The people who most should be watching these hearings are just not watching the hearings. That's a sad reality.
Yeah.
All right. But listen, we've got a vote. At least you'll vote, right?
Of course. Every time.
Everyone will vote. All right, Trenton, thank you for the call. All right. Trenton, very, very good. Let's go next to Blake from Seattle. Blake, welcome. Blake from Seattle, you are on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I was just wondering, I kind of wanted to run something by you. When it comes to taxing the rich,
I wanted to know if it would be a good idea to tax the rich on the loans that they get.
Sorry, I'm kind of nervous.
So let me see if I understand the question.
You're saying, let me explain it and we'll see if I'm on the right track here, Blake, okay?
Okay.
So a mechanism that sometimes the wealthy use is they have all of these stocks and bonds. If they sell the stocks and bonds and there's been appreciation, they owe capital gains. So what you can do is get like a pledged asset loan or otherwise take a loan against those stocks and bonds. So you say, hey, I've got $10 million in stock. Give me a $5 million loan. I'll give you the stock as collateral. The five million loan doesn't count as income, and then you just spend the five million, and you're sort of avoiding the taxes at least while you're alive. That's kind of what you're suggesting, right?
Yeah, so I was saying, maybe there's like a threshold so like a normal person can get like a normal loan without paying tax for it.
Right.
The super rich would have to pay taxes on it, and I don't care if like in the end they want to, you know, write it off on their taxes as like the $5 million that they borrowed, even if the stock appreciates and they have to pay the rest of the capital gains when they sell it. But I feel like that would prevent more of the super rich people from avoiding taxes.
Yep. I mean, listen, you're thinking along the same lines that we recently did an interview with an inequality economist who said a similar idea is let's tax the rich when their money is just sitting in order to kind of influence them to put the money into the economy in some kind of more stimulative way.
I think these are all totally reasonable ideas,
and Blake, I think it's great that you're thinking about it.
The changes that would be required, but the degree of changes to the way the tax code works
in order to do that, that's far more complicated than like changing the top tax rate or the capital gains rate. So I don't want to say it'll never happen, but it'll probably never happen because that's just not the way loan proceeds work.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I feel like that would solve a lot of the problems, and it would prevent that whole wealth tax thing from people who feel like that's unfair.
Yep, absolutely. No, you're thinking along the right lines. There's economic realities and there's political realities.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks, David. I appreciate it.
All right, Blake from Seattle. Very good call. We're going to take a very short break. If you're hanging on to talk to me, just keep holding because I'm going right back to the phones in a moment.
Okay, let's hear from more of the most important people, the audience.
Without the audience, I'm a guy in a room with a microphone, and it's really, really sad. Let's go next to Dave from Brooklyn. Dave, welcome. Dave from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
You are muted.
You've got to unmute yourself in order to talk to me.
And last call for Dave from Brooklyn, who has muted himself.
And Dave has cried. All right, let's go to an old friend, Issa from London. Issa, welcome.
Hey, David. Following on from, I think it was John, who was talking about the Kennedy praying case.
Yes.
So I'm an NFL fan myself. Unfortunately, I'm a Cardinals fan, so the season has been in misery for the most part.
Fair.
But I was thinking it's really strange how it's the only sports league in the whole world, and I guess the only sport in the whole world where religion, specifically Christianity, seems to be ingrained in the culture. What do you think about that?
You're saying Christianity is ingrained in the NFL? How is that?
Maybe not in the NFL, but even in college football and even in the high school level of the sport. Like, I've heard about majority of the players being Christian, and I've heard instances of daily practice and training sessions where guys have prayer circles, and it goes back to that thing where you're expected to bow your head and sort of just join in out of respect.
Agree. Agree, totally. I mean, a lot of the top high school programs and college programs are in some of the most religious parts of the country, and that I absolutely agree with.
Like Alabama and Clemson, for example.
Yep.
But then, like Tim Tebow, who obviously flopped, but then he went on Fox and he was talking about his religious beliefs. You know, I heard stories about guys like him, for example. When he was at the combine before he joined the league, there was some instance where he said to everyone, "Hey guys, let's have a prayer circle." And apparently he was laughed at. But I think it's just a bit strange how much religion seems to be ingrained in the culture on and off the field.
I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't resonate with me, but it's You know, it is what it is. I think it is true that it is less present in other major sports. I mean, you don't hear about the big Christian presence in soccer, for example. Soccer is much smaller in the United States also. But I agree with you completely. To me, it's all a bit weird.
Yeah, same.
It's also just like at the end of the day,
if both teams pray and one team wins, did God choose that team?
Was it because they practiced more or because they prayed more? I mean, it's always a little bit strange to me for that reason as well.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Things are otherwise good in London?
Not really, no. But
what's going on?
Well, I mean, you know, by the time the show airs, the latest affairs will probably be outdated, like something new each week. What's the most recent, probably the UK Tories looking to repeal a European-based human rights act because they wanted to deport asylum-seeking immigrants to Rwanda.
I don't know if you heard about that. No, I did not. I have not been following that.
So there was a plane ready to deport them. And then right at the last second, the European-based Human Rights Council blocked it. So now they want to repeal these human rights laws. So they can proceed with basically deporting immigrants.
Wow, so not that different than what Republicans want to do here, it sounds.
Not really, no.
Hey, Issa, before I let you go, can you name three countries that start with the letter G?
G.
Yeah.
Gabon, Gambia, Germany.
Beautiful. All right, thank you, my friend. Good to talk to you.
See you.
All right, there you go. There's Issa from London giving us a little trivia as well. Let's see who else we have holding on today. Let's go to Taylor from Indiana. Taylor, you've called in before, right?
I don't believe that I have.
No, okay. Well, welcome anyway.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
I wanted to read a quote from John Adams and then discuss it.
Okay, I'm a little hesitant. Do you have a question?
I do, and it really relates to the quote.
He said this pertaining to
the forming of the country, the American Revolution, and their constitution.
Okay.
He said, quote, It will never be pretended that any persons employed in that service had interviews with the gods, or in any degree under the inspiration of heaven, more than those that worked upon ships or houses, laboring in merchandise or agriculture.
Okay.
It will forever be acknowledged that these governments contrived merely by the use of reason and the senses. End quote. I guess my question is, How did we get to this point that it seems like somebody cannot be even elected to office without invoking some type of religion?
I know.
And what do we do about it if there's anything we can?
What we do about it is we need a less Christian nationalist Supreme Court so that the decisions increasingly separate church and state rather than blend them together. But the big picture, I mean, the point you're getting to is You have all these right-wing Christian dominionist nationalist types who want to ignore everything the founding fathers said and instead go, hey, they were personally religious, therefore they probably didn't want separation of church and state, ignoring everything they said,
which is absolutely nuts. Right, and that's for the most part a myth that the majority of the founders were very religious.
Yeah, tell me what you know about that. I know that many of them were religious, but not all.
Well, so one example I know of, Thomas Jefferson. is famous for editing the Bible with a razor blade, cutting out all the supernatural parts. I'm not here to promote a book necessarily, but there's a good book by Andrew Seidel, constitutional attorney.
Yep, we've interviewed him.
I've been listening to that book. And there's all kinds of good information in there. The book's called The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American.
Indeed.
And there's just so many lies for all of the supposed Christian things that George Washington did, like praying in the snow at Valley Forge and things like that. It's all just completely made up.
Well, I don't know enough about that to say for sure. I'll research it. But your main point is absolutely well taken, and I appreciate you making it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Taylor, very nice phone call. Appreciate it. Let's talk to some other people. I mean, listen, why not, right? We're doing it. Let's go to Emmanuel from New York. Emmanuel, welcome back. I know I've spoken to you, right?
Yeah, you have.
Beautiful.
I have a question for you. Like, do you think political violence will be necessary? Like, if you look at history, people have used political violence. Like, do you know about the country Rhodesia? You heard about it, right?
I know. I'm familiar with Rhodesia. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, like, they were treated the majority of black people as, like, crap, yeah, so they fought back, and, you know, they won the war for Zimbabwe, so, do you think that we can apply that to, like, what's happening in the Supreme Court, the voting issue, with the voting issue, abortion, and the policing in America?
Maybe this is me being naively optimistic, but I also, from a practical standpoint, don't think that violence is going to be the solution here. Because violence is not going to, let me see how I can put this, the United States right now, it's almost like a logistical problem, violence to achieve goals in the United States. The U.S. is mostly, left-leaning cities. Within kind of purple metro areas inside of right-leaning rural areas across a vast expanse of land. And I just don't know from a practical standpoint how, even just saying, if we're okay morally with using violence to achieve change. I don't know how in a country like the U.S. that's how you do it. It just seems like chaos and death and injury and insanity without actually really achieving political change. So we're just going to use violence. I'm also morally opposed to it, but that's a different question.
Yeah, like in Zimbabwe, did achieve the goals because you know what happened to it.
I'm not that familiar with Zimbabwean history.
Okay, one more question. Do you think what happens to Supreme Court will change the effect of the Latino vote? Because, like, my parents vote for Democrat, but, like, if you look at them, they're very conservative, actually. Because I saw the Telemundo, you know that Spanish show?
Yeah.
And basically, one woman said, I'm Democrat, I don't like abortion. So, what did that actually change, the Latino vote?
So it is true. So the Latino vote in the U.S. is interesting. The Latino vote is generally left-wing, other than Cubans and some Venezuelans. But the Latino vote is also very Catholic, and so there is more anti-abortion sentiment among the Latino vote than some might believe. I think if there is any impact from the Roe v. Wade decision on 2022, I think it helps Democrats. I don't know how to slice it and dice it in the Latino vote, but I think the polling is already telling us that if anybody's going to benefit from the Roe v. Wade decision, it's going to be Democrats in the fall. We'll see.
Do you think they have a little effect or no?
I think that, in general, or on the Latino vote?
I think that the Roe v. Wade decision will have an effect, and it will help Democrats in the fall. All right, thank you for the question. Good luck with the video.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. That does it for today, folks. I know I didn't get to everyone. I never do. I'm sorry. But we got to a bunch of people, and we will speak to more people next week. We'll take a quick break and be right back. All right, it is time for the Friday mailbag, and what a mailbag it is. If you have something to say, you can email info@davidpacman.com. Respectful messages are always preferred, but they can be about absolutely anything that's on your mind. So let's start today with Vincent. Vincent, is, as usual, not happy with me, and he's not happy with Jews. And okay, so Vincent says, why would any Jew or black be in favor of gun control? If I were a member of a group that was put in danger of extermination, as the Jews were by 30s and 40s Germany, I would never give up my arms. Similarly, the very first Jim Crow laws passed after Reconstruction were laws prohibiting the ownership of firearms by blacks. If someone ever enslaved me, I would never turn over my guns. An armed person is a citizen, and an unarmed person is a potential slave. So this is this particular email is not overtly anti-Semitic. This Vincent guy, every email is about Jews one way or the other. He can't send an email without mentioning Jews. But to the point here, first of all, there's two sides to this. Number one, the whole concept of if the Jews had guns in Germany, there would have been no Holocaust. It has been studied extensively by historians, and it has been widely debunked. It is not true that if the Jews had handguns in Germany, or even rifles in Germany, right before the Holocaust, that it would have prevented it. And similarly, in the United States, when folks think handguns and AR-15s are going to prevent government tyranny, if it really came to it, had the tanks and the Black Hawk helicopters and the shoulder-mounted RPGs, it's not. So either the argument doesn't make sense, or you're saying citizens should be able to own those arms, or, you know, I've actually talked to Bill Shapiro about this. You can find that conversation on our YouTube channel. But the second piece is the following one.
I am sensitive to the idea that government tyranny aside,
Is it really good if only the right-wing nuts have the guns? And that's why many of my liberal friends are now firearms owners. And as I said before, I don't talk about my own ownership or lack thereof of firearms, but there are many people I know who say, I don't even really like guns, but I don't want only the right-wing nuts to have them. And it is sort of a race to the bottom. That's the sad thing about it.
Next email is from Nathan.
Nathan writes about the Overton window and says, David, sir, are you familiar with the Overton window? This concept seems to be the reason why Pence has been characterized as saving democracy by simply doing his job, opposed to Trump's insanity. It's similar to the concept I've heard you describe before as hyper-normalization. Adam Curtis rocks too.
This concept is very hard to work into conversations with the Trump supporters in my life.
Any tips to deal? Much love from very red upstate New York area. Yeah, I've been spending more and more time in upstate New York.
It is shockingly right-wing.
And when you look at New York as a state, it's very blue, but that's extremely skewed by the city and a few other spots. But I've spent a lot of time lately in the Hudson area, and right in Hudson, it's quite blue.
But everywhere around,
I haven't looked at the maps, but it looks very, very deep red. Joe Biden has dementia, lawn signs, and all sorts of different stuff. But yes, it is absolutely true that when the Republican Party has lost its mind, when Mike Pence says,
I can't overturn the results.
Some people go, what a hero. What a pro-democracy hero he is. When Liz Cheney says, hey, Joe Biden really won. And Trump decided to sit in the January 6th riot. We go, wow, what a heroic, reasonable Republican. Because in comparison, they seem that way.
But these are not heroes.
These are just some of the few... Somewhat attached to reality voices that remain in the Republican Party.
Neil wrote in about my Alex Jones impression.
Neil says, David, since you asked, I don't really like your Alex Jones impression.
Not because it isn't very good, but because as a person with a lisp, I cringe heavily when people fake lisp.
To me, it seems your impression is just a heavy lisp,
not a heavy smoker, as the caller mentioned.
Anyway, love the show.
Yeah, is that even a lisp?
Like when Alex Jones says globalish,
I don't think of that as a lisp.
I think of a lisp as something else. Anyway, I'm not going to even mimic it now.
We're not making fun of lisps.
We're not doing any of it.
That being said,
there is this thing. I don't know if it's a lisp, but I don't know if you guys have noticed that Don Jr. and Ivanka.
They seem to have fake teeth that are a little bit too big for them,
and it makes them speak in a weird way.
I don't think that's a lisp either.
Maybe I just don't know enough about what counts as a lisp.
But Anyway, we're certainly not making fun of lisps here on the show.
Thank you,
Neil. Jillian wrote in about fuel prices.
Jillian
says, fuel prices have an impact on cost of living. That's undeniable.
But it amazes me that Americans cannot see the whole picture.
For a long time now, the low cost of fuel in the U.S. has been an enviable luxury as seen from other countries. Now prices have risen across the world. In fact, in Ghana, where I currently live, the price of a gallon of diesel has rocketed to $7.17 or $5.95 a gallon, depending on whether you use U.K. or USA gallons. This is in a country where many live well below the poverty line, and this price rise has extreme effects. I sympathize with all people who are suffering at the moment, not just those in one country.
One of the things we have to acknowledge is it can both be true that paying $4.50 a gallon instead of $2.50 a gallon in the United States is a major impact on a lot of families.
That's true.
And also, prices in the U.S. for fuel are really low compared to the rest of the world, for the most part, other than some extremely oil-producing rich nations.
I think, like in the Emirates, fuel is really cheap.
But that's because fuel prices in the U.S. have not been accurate in terms of representing the true cost of fuel.
Gasoline prices are subsidized in the U.S.,
and the production is subsidized.
So what that means is there's a lot of environmental The production is subsidized, and the environmental impact is not accurately reflected by the prices that we pay, so we are not accurately charging the end user for gasoline and diesel.
That's the truth
in the United States. And when gas prices more accurately reflect their full costs, including on the environment, people drive much smaller fuel-efficient vehicles.
When I was in Spain, somewhere between a month and 10 years ago, I think last summer, 10 months ago,
I rented a relatively fuel-efficient vehicle.
I don't even remember what it was. There's all these little vehicles that they have in Europe that we don't have here in the U.S.
Stick shift, little hatchback,
and quite fuel efficient.
And it was still really expensive to drive around
because you have to convert euro to dollar, and you have to convert liters to gallons and do the whole thing.
I think it was roughly seven something a gallon.
And just doing a reasonable amount of driving still costs a bunch.
The tolls are very high.
Driving around is much more accurately priced in Europe and in other parts of the world.
So 100% Jillian is correct.
Gerson wrote in about David Beardman.
He says, hello, David, I am writing this story for you to grow out your beard. I see limitless potential in your facial hair. Clean up the neckline, set your follicles free.
I assure you, you will have elegant whiskers in no time.
Use jojoba oil and a beard balm of your choice.
To keep everything healthy and moisturized,
a boar hair brush is also a worthwhile investment.
Sincerely, a man with a similar beard.
Yeah, you know what happened was when the baby came and then I had the unexpected time off and all these different things.
I just didn't have time to shave. Last night I did a little cleanup and I cleaned up my neckline and everything.
I am willing to get creative with the beard.
That is not something I am afraid of.
Let's see where it goes.
Fletch wrote in and says, why not arm the military with baseball bats and knives?
Sir, a common argument I'm coming across from the right is that knives and baseball bats can kill.
Yet we have no restrictions on those,
so why have restrictions on guns?
In that case, why not send the troops into battle
only with knives and baseball bats?
Surely if a bat is just as lethal as a high-powered rifle,
then purchasing said rifles for the troops is a waste of taxpayer dollars.
Of course, yeah, I mean, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but there's some sense to that.
If it were true that knives and baseball bats and hammers and all these things are potentially just as deadly as guns,
then why waste all the money on guns for the military and for police?
Yes.
Now there are some pretty easy holes to poke in that.
But it is a fair question to be asking regardless.
Philip writes in. And says, what's the controversy over the word expat?
David, the following question is in regards to a response of yours about how to identify Ukraine on the YouTube video entitled Trump on His Knees for Jesus.
That's a great video.
As an expat living in Thailand, I did not know there was a controversy surrounding the term expat.
Could you explain it again?
So here's the deal with the term expat. I have two answers to this.
On the one hand, the reason the term expat has gotten controversial is that there's a sort of racialized class element to it,
and I'll explain it to you. When someone from Thailand comes to the United States, we rarely call them expats. We call them immigrants. And when an American goes to Thailand, we often don't say, I'm an immigrant. People say, I'm an expat. So I think you can understand how implicit in that there's potentially a class and a race element to it. But I also want to go further. Sometimes when the white dude, you know, assuming Philip is an American white dude, when the white dude goes to Thailand, they're not going and finding work in the local economy. They're either going already as sort of semi-retired, or they're going and working a remote American job and earning U.S. dollars while in Thailand. That's different than someone from Thailand who comes to the United States and has to find work. Let's call it like non-professional, not a doctor that comes to the U.S. to become a doctor from Thailand, but people in the service industry. And so on the one hand, there's this kind of race class thing where when the Americans go elsewhere, we call them expats. And when people from other countries come to the U.S., we call them immigrants. Sometimes there is a difference, which is you go and you're a remote worker for a tech company in Thailand, and that's a little bit different because your relationship to the Thai economy is then other than when someone comes to the U.S. and works in the service industry. So I think that there are differences between types of immigration, and that's the controversy that exists over the term expat. Here's a few bonuses. Jesse commented on YouTube, Dear David Parkman, you have never needed a gun, and you have no right to speak about guns. Well, number one, saying I have no right to speak, that doesn't sound like you support free speech. I have no right to speak, but this is very dumb. This is like saying, if you've not been in the military, you can't have an opinion about the Iraq War. We heard some right-wingers saying that during George W. Bush's Iraq War. That's silly. And also, you have never needed a gun. I have chosen not to talk about my personal relationship to guns on the show, including my ownership or lack of ownership of firearms. So I think it's neither here nor there, but you don't know anything about my relationship to guns. Okay, Jesse, thank you very much. Another YouTube comment. No cap, but I honestly thought Pac-Man was like 26 or 27 years old tops. Please share your skincare routine. Okay, David. Okay, here's my skincare routine. I use face lotion with SPF 15. I just use it. Okay, when I'm out there, I've got sunscreen. Summer, winter, spring, fall. I've got SPF. And then otherwise, that's really it. I use a vitamin C cleanser in the shower. Thank you very much. And lastly, John says, people wake up. Mr. Pac-Man is our enemy. Mr. Pac-Man hates the common American. I wonder why he didn't talk about Biden's mental health.
I've actually talked about it many times.
Also, why did he not talk about Biden stopping the feds from dealing with the virus and making it the state's problem?
What?
Funny, wasn't that Biden's big campaign promise to end the virus? What the hell? Pac-Man, how much is Big Pharma and George Soros giving you to give us propaganda?
Nothing.
I bet you're a millionaire from that, not from the common American. You're a sellout, and people are beginning to see this.
I couldn't possibly address that.
In the way in which it should substantively be addressed. So let me do a presented without comment.
Thank you very much to everybody who wrote in. Info at davidpacman.com.
Bonus show coming up. Just me on today's bonus show. No Pat.
Pat's gone.
But you'll get me.
Better or worse.
Sign up at joinpacman.com. Otherwise, we'll see you after the July 4th holiday.
Those of you concerned with your health, USDA Organic Products, Netherlands, WRCC Pittsburgh, would like to inform you that all MTJs that are genetically modified during you as fast as
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be using music long after your starring forms has evaporated by a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh.
Like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet, because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
And you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT. Insane. From way out.
Possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to...
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
New York, this is Democracy Now.
What? The American slave is your 4th of July. I answer, day that reveals to him more than all other days of the year those gross injustice and cruelty to which he is a constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham.
Slave is your 4th of July. We're here at Frederick Douglass's 1852 Independence Day address, performed by James Earl Jones. Then, as the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, we'll speak to Catherine Kitty Colbert. She argued the landmark case of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the case that upheld Roe. She's co-author of Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. We'll also speak with law professor Michelle Goodwin, author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women, and the Criminalization of Motherhood.
Now, under us,
to a country where there are three states where individuals can be free in their bodies, and also those where it is non-free, and one can't help but understand this as being so consistent with the patterns of slavery and Jim Crow in the United States.
We'll also talk to Professor Goodwin about her New York Times op-ed, "I Was Raped by My Father, and Abortion Saved My Life." And we re-air Amanda Gorman's inaugural poem. She finished just after the January 6th insurrection. She's the youngest inaugural poet in U.S. history.
We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country, our people diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade of flame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today in this special broadcast, we begin with the words of Frederick Douglass. Born into slavery around 1818, Douglass became a key leader of the abolitionist movement. On July 5th, 1852, in Rochester, New York, Frederick Douglass gave one of his most famous speeches, "What to the Slave is Your 4th of July?" He was addressing the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society. This is James Earl Jones reading the historic address during a performance of Voices of a People's History of the United States. It was co-edited by Howard Zinn, the late great historian, introduced the address.
Frederick Douglass, once a slave, became a brilliant and powerful leader of the anti-slavery movement. In 1852, he was asked to speak in celebration of the 4th of July.
Fellow citizens, pardon me and allow me to ask, why am I called upon to speak here today? What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? Are the great principles of political freedom and of natural justice embodied in that Declaration of Independence extended to us, and am I therefore called upon to bring our humble offering to the national altar and to